Hey guys, it's Society 9 here. Lynn, founder and CEO.
Megan Sconey Fraser. And
what do you do for Society 9? Fool.
I'm the director of marketing and sales.
Sells all the things. So for those of you who are joining us for the very first time, Society 9, really quickly, we're the brand for the fight within every woman, and we make the best gear possible for female fighters everywhere. And keep in mind, female fighters exist across all sports, so we are here to serve you, my badass ladies. We are super excited because we have Glenna Avila here today. She's a very good friend of mine and somebody who I admire and respect very much, and I always have a good time talking to her. So I'm like so excited for this podcast because we basically take our girl talks and are putting it now here to share with all of you. And you're either going to be super entertained by it or be like, what the fuck.
But did I just spend time
did I just waste time hanging out with these women, these crazy women? But anyway, so Glenna just finished up a fight with Super Fight League against Amy Montenegro, and she'll share some of her stories about her fight camp, the fight itself, the aftermath, as she's rocking two badass casts on her hands right now. But we'll just be chatting like we always do, and Glenna's awesome. So Glenna, tell the world a little bit about yourself, and we'll just get right into it and hang out.
I've been fighting for quite some time, about 6 years total, it's just what I do. Some people go to the office and, you know, clock in, and, you know, my job at this point is basically to show up at the gym, train my butt off, and fight in a cage.
Sounds like a dope job.
Yeah.
Hardest job ever, but dope job.
Some people punch clocks, I punch faces.
love it. But yeah, so Glenna's had a crazy last couple of years just between, and I'll let her speak to it, but you know, she had a documentary that's now featured on Showtime. If you guys haven't seen it, it's called Glenna, and it's her story.
Yeah, I want to know about this because I didn't know.
Yeah. Megan is not in the know.
I'm probably going to spend the rest of the day stalking you now, Glenna.
I'll tell you. IMDb like, that shit.
If you watch it, it's not what you expect. When people talk about a movie about a female fighter, you think that the movie itself is just about fighting, and it's not. So it appeals to, I feel like, the general public in the fact that it's a story about a woman who accomplished a lot in life, coming from, you know, not much of background, like struggling through, like I had a hard childhood and things like that. And I was semi-successful, had a really great paying job, owned my own house, you know, had two beautiful kids. And I decided to do something a little different than what society maybe thought I should be doing. And the movie is basically following me on that journey from, you know, after I started fighting as an amateur to me saying, you know what, I think I want to try to do this professionally. And some of the hardships, the judgments, and different things that happen when a female decides to do something that is a little different.
Well, especially because, I mean, and we've talked about it, I think, on our last podcast, is, you know, female fighting really has just started blowing up in the past couple of years. So, you know, 6 years ago, that must have been a really hard decision to get people on board with.
Yeah, it was, but it was like the harder parts were, you know, for my kids, really. Like my kids had to deal with the judgments. It wasn't just like, you know, something that I had to do just for me. It was like when my son went to school, it was something that his friends talked about. It was something that his teachers talked about.
Really?
It was something that... Yeah, and you know, it's not that everybody was against it. Some people were fascinated by it, curious by it, but there was a lot of judgment back then that there must be something wrong with me to want to do this sport. And you know, why on earth would, and I'm going to say it exactly how they presented it to me, why would such a pretty girl want to do something like that? And that's like one of the most annoying things.
Well, Glenna, you do know that you are just an object, and the only thing that's important is...
That's my only value to society is that I have straight teeth and a little nose. You know what I mean? Like, when I was asked, because one of the points that's brought up in the movie is I ended up in a custody battle over one of my children for continuing to fight. And what was presented to the court was that I had a violent personality. And, you know, some of it was bringing things that happened in my childhood mm-hmm. up, and some of it was that I compete.
Yeah.
I had to argue in court over why I didn't think I was a violent person and why I was still a good mother. And so one of the questions I get is, was it worth that fight? Like, why would you continue to fight knowing that the risk was losing your child? And I didn't see it that way at the time.
Yeah.
At the time, I felt like I was fighting not just for my daughter, mm-hmm. right? I was fighting for my daughter to have the same opportunities that her brother had. Mm-hmm. And that's why the fight was important. That's why I needed to continue to do it. And I think that the movie gives me kind of a sounding board to be able to talk about these mm-hmm. things. And so I've been really blessed to have that.
God, every time Glenna gets into these roles,
I know,
about,
I just
like,
kind of stared at you.
I just have, like, tears welled up in my eyes. Like, this woman, I swear to God, if any of you guys get to know Glenna on a personal level, like, shit, every time I hear this story, I'm just like, I am nothing. I'm not worthy. So we went to Invicta this weekend, and I honestly thought about your story with all these women too. Yeah. Like, I don't know if they have kids necessarily or spouses, whatever, but it's just like, just thinking like, this story is likely not unlike what they have gone
absolutely.
Through. And like,
absolutely.
It's ironic because obviously Ronda Rousey has done a lot to catalyze this sport in the last 2 or 3 years to actually mm-hmm. make it something acceptable. But it still doesn't change the fact that there is this
freak show.
I don't know if that's the right word, but like, and taboo is not the right word anymore either, but there's still this, like, okay, the fact that you still get comments about like, you're so pretty, why would you want to do this? And I'm sure many CrossFit athletes probably get the same thing, especially the super muscular ones.
Yeah, like, you're so pretty, but you're too
muscular. Oh, that whole thing. Oh my gosh, I hate that when people say things like that. Aren't you worried you're going to start looking like a man? Well, no.
Well, I don't have a ton of testosterone coursing through my body, so probably not.
Yeah, no, seriously. You see my cup size?
I'm like, dude, you know how hard I work to get this definition in my arms? Like, yeah. Come on.
Exactly.
I'm very proud of this.
Yeah. I know right now you're healing from your Super Fight League injuries. Tell us a little bit more about like sort of the highlights of that fight, what you learned, but also like what's next for you, like how that experience opened up.
Well, you know, it was not unlike a lot of my fights. I was kind of going into enemy territory. That's
your style, though. I feel like Glenna.
I was going to her hometown. And I'll be honest with you, like the fight between Amy and I had been talked about for years. Like people had brought it up for years, and there were a lot of things that came up between her and I that it just never came through. I mean, even back in the amateurs, it had been
She's
talked
from
about.
Washington, right?
She is from Washington, yeah. And that one, it just finally came through. Timing was good. Everything kind of worked out for both of us, and we both wanted the fight. And you know, there was a lot of respect displayed on both sides, and I came out and I fight like I normally do. It's like one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter what happens in the cage. Like, you know, I'll fight to the death if they let me. Like, I laugh about my record when people bring up my record, because I fight the girls that most people won't. And I come up on the wrong side of a lot of split decisions. Mm-hmm. And when people ask me about it, I always tell them, well, this is the way I look at it. I've never lost a fight, ever. Like, I lose by someone's opinion, but when it comes down to it, I've never tapped out. I've never quit. I've never had anyone throw in the towel. Mm-hmm. I've never been close to being knocked out, and I will just keep fighting. So in that aspect, I feel like I've never lost. I've just kind of run out of time.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I'm just going for the really long game.
Yeah, right. I will just keep going. Like, it's one of those things where they have to tell me, okay, the fight is over. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's time to hug my opponent now. Good job.
Oh, man. But yeah, we started talking a little bit about, like, how after the fight, like, you've reflected on some things and you want to sort of open some new opportunities. Based, obviously, on your fight career, but also, you know, the documentary that you did and how that obviously has affected a ton of people who, again, maybe have never seen any sort of women's fighting, but then all of a sudden we're open up to the world because of you, maybe, you know, like we'd love to hear a little bit more, because we started talking about it and then we were like, we should wait and actually talk about this.
Well, the movie kind of gave me the opportunity to travel around and do a lot of really cool things. And I was in a lot of film festivals, and with those film festivals, each one is different. A couple of them I was able to go to like a high-risk high school, and after watching the movies, we did a Q&A, and it was such a surreal experience to be able to talk to these kids, because like I said, I had a rough upbringing, I had a rough childhood, and I was able to talk to these kids and talk about their future and talk about how it doesn't really matter, you know, how long you go the wrong direction. You can always turn around. Mm-hmm. You can always do something different. You can always do something big. And for me, like, my passion was fighting. Like, that was something that I was really, turned out to be really good at. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy figuring out ways to defeat my opponents. Like, I love it. But for, you know, this child here, who maybe nobody's ever talked to them about college, you know, but they really love to write, that I get to talk to that child and say, listen, you know, if you want to write, do it. Just go and do it. Like, there's nothing that says, because, you know, your parents, maybe, I don't know, maybe they were drug addicts, maybe they just didn't pay attention to you or whatever, that has to dictate your whole future, right? Because, like, in all of them, they all have the ability to be great at, you know, whatever it is that drives them, you know?
When I was dealing with kids, I found, too, a lot of times, like, because they don't have these parents that are guiding them, or they don't have these leadership, they don't really have the ability to look beyond like their current circumstance and see that they do have the opportunity to better themselves. So it's amazing what finding a passion. Dion and I always talk about that, how important. I always say, I don't care when we do have kids, I don't care what their passion is. I just want them to have something, something that drives them. And I think with kids that are like quote unquote at risk, that's the biggest thing, is just encouraging them to find something, and then setting those goals to get them to where they want to be with that passion. Right. Like, telling them that's an option is super empowering for them, I think.
Right. Well, it's something like with my daughter. Like, my daughter is not, she's not really into like athletic things. She's an artist and she creates things all the time.
Your kids are so talented, by the way. You're always posting stuff. Like, and I'm like,
it's like, it doesn't matter how many titles I win. Like, they are my best thing I've ever done. Like, I look at them and I'm so amazed, like, that they came from me.
Your son dances, he paints, he does graffiti, like amazing pieces. Yeah. And then Annie, same thing. Like, when we were filming the first Society 9 commercial, I remember she was just sitting on the side. I'm like, what are you doing, Annie? She's like, I'm just drawing. And she like flipped through like 5 pages of full blown drawings that she did within like 2 hours.
Yeah. And but, she like, beautiful. Loves it. She loves it. And and the thing is, like, Annie got to witness firsthand. Like, she's a gym kid. She lives in the gym with me practically. And she got to witness firsthand what it takes to follow your dream, what it takes. And for her, like I said, it's painting and drawing. Like, people always ask her, do you want to be a fighter like your mom? And she's like, no. And no, I'm not offended by that. Like, I think it's great that she doesn't want to be a fighter. I think it's totally, I mean, if she did, I would support her, but she wants to paint.
Yeah.
And she wants to specifically, like, she's really into painting animals now. She loves animals and she wants to create, she's 14 years old. She wants to create her own business, painting people's pets for them. Mm-hmm. And
my dog will sit for her.
Like, you should see some of the stuff she does, and it's like, it's amazing to see her like evolve into this like mini adult doing something that makes her happy, you know. So I couldn't be more proud.
And she's very what I appreciate about Annie is that she's very like resolved. For 14 years old, she's just like, she knows what she wants to do, and there's really no bones about it. Like, it's not that, like, to her it's not that complicated.
Right.
But if only she knew that, you know, probably your journey, my journey, yours too. Like,
well, and like, but that comes from having someone like you in her life that said, okay, I have a goal, I'm whatever it takes, that attitude, and teaching her to apply that to other things. And that's why it's so important to have people like you going around to these schools and doing these speeches and like letting them know, like, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters where you want to go from there.
Right.
And that's obviously, it's not that easy, but, but saying that like, it's okay to have these passions. It's okay to have ambition.
Yes, so. Exactly. Exactly. And so that's been kind of, it's funny because that kind of lit a fire in me to do something a little different. So I'm, you know, exploring the options of going around, maybe doing some motivational speaking, maybe taking the movie on the road to different high schools, junior highs, like youth detention centers, like just about anything. Not that I wouldn't talk to adults. I talk to adults about stuff like that too. But I find that when the adult people, like the crowds, watched the movie, they had, their questions were a little different. You know, they want to know, well, so how much money do you make now? You know,
yeah.
And, you know, whatever happened with this and whatever happened with that, where the kids were like these questions like, what do you do when you're afraid? How do you overcome that? And, you know, those kind of questions, which, you know, made me think about myself and, you know.
Well, and when you're working with children, you have the opportunity to not have to speak to them when they're adults.
Exactly.
You're breaking that cycle.
I also feel like, though, like when you do feel those questions from adults, you risk them coming from a place of judgment. Mm-hmm. Either like their own self-reflection on themselves, right? Of like, oh,
well, they're developed. They have their own perception.
Developed, exactly. They are developed. They have their own preconceived notions about what you do or like what you shouldn't do, right? As a woman or whatever the case may be. And so I can definitely understand and see why kids, that's the breeding ground for, I mean, not to sound cheesy, but the next flood, right. The next generation.
Well, I mean, I think it has something to do with the fact that, like, when I was that age, I felt kind of like a lost soul. Mm. You know what I mean? I was, you know, a teen. I was like the stereotype. I was a teen mom, and, you know, in one of those situations. And I had a woman by the name of Rachel Harry. She was a teacher and also a dance coach that took me in at a really, I mean, I was homeless and pregnant and a teenager, and she took me into her home with her family and taught me things, taught me how to be a good mother, taught me that I had choices, that, you know, things didn't have to be as they appeared, and I had potential to do things, and it changed my whole life, like, it really did, and I feel like if I can be that for even one person, let's just say I did that for one person, then I would feel like a successful human being no matter what happened in the fight career. You know what I mean?
That's pretty heavy.
I know. I just, Glenna's good with
silence.
Glenna's good with mic drops. Like, she says, she starts on these eloquent speeches that I'm like nodding the whole time. And then when she's done, I'm like, oh, it's done. Like, what do I say?
So, with wanting to go into public speaking, you know, are you going to try to reach out to schools in the area, or what are you thinking?
Well, I've had,
and what can Society 9 do to help you?
Yeah, like, seriously, what can we do to help you?
It's kind of funny because, like, I, while I was traveling, I end up in these conversations. I met this, older fellow one time that does motivational speaking. And he, like, I was just having this normal conversation with a guy on a plane, this like older gentleman. Mm-hmm. And he's like, here's my card. If you ever want to do this, like, you'd be amazing at it. Mm-hmm. And I have these kind of experiences. So I was like, I wonder what I would need to explore this option. But yeah, I'll probably start with high schools. Mm-hmm. I think my mentor that I would brought up, Rachel Harry, works for Hood River Valley High School.
Okay.
And I think I'll probably, we've talked briefly about it. Sometimes they have a harder time opening their door to a female cage fighter because that's how they want to brand me.
Right.
But I think the viewing the movie kind of helps them open that door.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, I'm still fishing and just kind of exploring my options. Still training, still coaching, still doing all of that kind of stuff.
Well, if anyone who works at a local school is listening to this podcast, you
or
should
knows anybody,
put in a good word.
Yeah, put in a good word. Reach out to us and we'll connect you to her immediately.
I would want my kids to hear from you.
Yeah, seriously. Cool.
That's really cool. So you're coaching as well. Where are you coaching?
I've been over at Fisticuffs Gym in Vancouver, Washington.
Awesome.
People can reach out to me on Facebook if they want to sign up, do personals, whatever. Mm-hmm. I specialize with women and children, but I work with men too. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem. Anything they want to learn, if they want to learn some boxing tricks, mm-hmm. some jujitsu tricks, wrestling, self-defense, like that's been kind of a big one. Been kind of working on a bully-proof system for younger people.
That would fit in. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, seriously.
So did you just kind of naturally progress into coaching? Because I feel like for a lot of athletes, that's like, I was a rower, so I pretty much, because I was always at the boathouse, it just made sense to become a coach. And obviously I'm passionate about it and I enjoy getting other people. There's nothing more fun than like seeing that spark light behind someone's eyes mm-hmm. for something that you have a spark for. So was that something natural for you to just kind of get into, or?
Well, it actually happened by chance. I showed up one time to train at a gym. Mm-hmm. I was there to train and one of the coaches didn't show up.
There you go.
And they were like, well, nope, the coach never showed up for the kids' class. Do you want to take over?
That's
and,
awesome.
My first experience, I tried to teach the kids like you would teach an adult class. Mm. And didn't work so well. Like, it was like herding cats. I was like, no. But I figured it out pretty fast. And then it ended up being kind of my favorite thing to do. I would team the younger kids with the older kids. I'd call them the bigs and the littles. And we would do like games and things to kind of teach. It's kind of funny because you teach principles and things by mm-hmm. creating a game. Mm-hmm. And it worked really well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
I used to always love watching at our gym in Pittsburgh, Stout Gym. I used to love watching the kids' jiu-jitsu classes because it just cracked me up, because jiu-jitsu is this beautiful art of all these little delicate movements. And you have one kid like overdoing cartwheels in the corner, but somehow they're engaged just long enough to kind of get it enough. And then you watch these kids like roll, and it was just the cutest thing.
It is. It's amazing. I would do this game. I got to tell you about this game. When the kids would come in, sometimes they would come in all hyper, right? Yeah. So they're like, can't stop touching each other. Like they're arguing, they're like talking when I'm trying to explain stuff. So I would do this. I called it the chipmunk drill.
I'm already on board.
I don't know if you guys watched Elevation Training, where people wear the oxygen mm-hmm. mask. Okay. So if you've got the ghetto way of, you know, where you don't have a lot of money and you don't have the expensive mask, you can do things like hold water in your mouth and just breathe through your nose and do these kind of things. So what I would do is I would make the kids all put water in their mouth, and then I would put them up against the wall, and they would have to run these drills the whole time with water in their mouth. And then at the end, I would take a bucket and they would all have to spit the water out to prove that they didn't swallow it.
As a child, I totally would have been the kid that was like taking little sips out the back to make it easier.
And I would be like, oh, so-and-so swallowed it. You guys got to all start over.
Yeah.
They're like, don't swallow your water.
Or burpees.
Is that like borderline waterboarding? No.
Coach Glenna.
Parents can't figure out why their kids are exhausted afterwards.
Their parents would laugh.
Your parents should feel really safe having their kids with Coach Glenna.
Here, put some water in your mouth.
That's awesome.
I know that they started using that trick at home.
Yeah. Right? Like the kids running, just bouncing off the wall. It's like chipmunk drill, let's go.
Here we go.
Awesome. I've heard of fisticuffs for a long time, but I've never dropped by. We should definitely stop by and say hello.
Oh yeah, you should. We've got some amazing athletes over there. I've had a lot of fun.
I know training. Haley trains there too, right?
Haley does train there. She's got a boxing match coming up.
Awesome.
Haley Brooks,
mm-hmm.
The Huntress,
yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
She's kindly put us on her banner.
I've edited a few of her photos too.
Yes. Yeah, she's kindly put us on her banner too. That's awesome to hear. Yeah, we haven't made it over the border yet, but we should go.
Yeah. You can totally come watch the class.
Is it an MMA gym or is it predominantly boxing and kickboxing?
Well, I would say that, it's an MMA gym, but they specialize in boxing.
Got it.
So
okay.
you get a little bit of everything, but I'll tell you, my boxing has never been better.
For sure. Well, Leonard's like really well known in town. Between
he
him
really
and
is.
Molly McConnell, I know they have.
And he trained her.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah. I've learned a lot of things, and it cracks me up, the stuff that people have, whatever in history, come up with these drills or whatnot that make you better at certain things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like the Rocky style fighter. Like I'll take a hit to throw a couple hits. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And people are always laughing. They're like, you know, you don't have to get hit. Like, you can move your head out of the way to counter.
I know that game.
And so it's something that Leonard's been working really hard with me about. And we do this thing. It's called the tire drill. So each person puts one foot in the tire. So imagine like a tire. You put one foot in the tire and one foot out of the tire. And then you punch at each other. You got to move, but you can't take your foot out. You can move in a circle.
I just saw a video of that for the first time a couple of days ago, and Dion was like, we should do this because I'm terrible. Lynn saw it on Saturday. We went to a boxing class, and I have no ability to move my upper body. I don't function.
That's the funniest part. Well, like, for, like, I'd been fighting for quite some time. It's the first time I was introduced to this tire drill, and my coach Leonard puts me in with his son Koa, who's like this young boy, but he's a very, very good boxer. And he puts me in and he's like, okay, this is what you're gonna do. And I'm standing there and I'm like leaning. So like I lean way out of the tire so that he can't reach me. He's like, Glenn, you gotta quit leaning. I'm like, he's like, you gotta move. I'm like, I would move, but my foot's in the tire. Like, he's too fast. I can't. Like, this is like, you're making me keep my foot in the tire, but I really don't want to be here right now.
I don't want to be in the tire. Like, let me out of the tire.
I know. Awesome. But I've gotten better. Like, that's the thing, is you face your fears and you get better. And so that's something that people comment on every, like, my latest fights. They're like, wow, you've really gotten better. Your footwork's gotten better. Your head movement's gotten better. And I'm like, that's I have no choice. My foot's been stuck in a tire.
If you only knew.
If people only knew that was the trick to getting better at movement, shove it in a tire. I was going to say, because, every time I've watched clips of your fights, like, when you watched the Glenna documentary, I wouldn't say that you were necessarily known as a grappler, but to a degree, that was like your specialty. But now when I watch your fights, I mean, obviously you still have that skill, but I definitely notice that, I mean, striking has almost become your main, your main game now, for sure.
Well, I feel like, honestly, like every fight is different. And this is why, like, when I tell people, and some fighters hate to hear that it's a physical game of chess, but it really is to me, because what I'm doing is I'm trying to figure out what is the strength of my opponent, and I'm going to make them fight the opposite. Mm-hmm. So when people ask me, hey, Glenna, what style of fighter are you? I say, well, who am I fighting first? Mm-hmm. So like when I'm fighting someone that's a known grappler, I try to force them to stand with me. Mm-hmm. And if I know someone is a striker, then I'm going to try to take them down. And I'll do whatever techniques I need to bully them, whether it's like get them against the cage to get a hold of their body or whatever. So I wouldn't say that I've really changed, but I've adapted. My striking's gotten better, so I'm more comfortable with it than I used to be. But I'm still the same grappler. Better. Mm-hmm. I'm even better now. But sometimes I just prefer, depending, you know, on who it is and what they're trying to do to me. Mm. And I'm stubborn, so it's... it's very hard for them to get me to play their game.
I would not want to face her.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, so you said that you didn't get a chance to watch the Invicta fights this weekend, right?
I didn't. Yeah. Unfortunately, I had a lot of other things that I was trying to do. And
yeah, it was a lot of fun for us. It was... it was the very first time for both of us.
For anyone listening to this who doesn't know, Lynn and I got a chance to go down to Orange County to watch the Invicta fights firsthand. That was pretty cool.
It was really cool. Like, earlier we talked about sort of the changes in women's MMA, and it was crazy. Megan and I still are kind of in disbelief, like, being in the audience and actually hearing genuine respect. Like, I honestly didn't know what to expect. I expected to experience male fans who are fetishists or weirdos, like screaming, yeah, where's the mud, you know, or whatever. But it was like people were golf clapping practically out of like respect for everything that was happening. It was weird.
Yeah, I kept saying, this is probably like the gazillionth time Lynn has heard this, but I just couldn't get over how when fights would start, it was like silent. It was like spooky silent because everyone was engrossed. Yeah. And I think part of that might be because, you know, some of the fighters, people don't know, so they're trying to watch and learn. But that's the thing. They're trying to watch and learn. It's not like when we go to Buffalo Wild Wings and watch a fight and you have these like people this is probably the first time they're ever watching a fight and they're screaming.
Pull her hair.
Yeah.
spinning back fist. Yeah. Oh, arm bar.
You know, just screaming whatever they know. Like,
to be fair, there was a guy standing next to Megan who kept yelling, suplex.
Yeah, just like, he just kept yelling. And I was like, what? But he was
fighter though.
Yeah, he wasn't yelling it so much as like, it was kind of like this under the breath murmur. And had I not been sitting next to him, I don't think I would have heard it. But that was like the most, that was it. That was the only thing I heard. So I was really impressed by that.
They'd be standing and banging it out, like whatever fighters are in the cage, and he'd still be like, suplex.
Yeah.
He's like, that's his money's worth right there. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Maybe I had bad fights where this guy was saying crossface. And like, like sprawl, crossface. I'm like, they're not even like,
do you even know what you're saying?
Yeah.
But no, it was really cool. Like you could tell people like were there to watch. Like they weren't there for the spectacle. They weren't there. I think there was a little, you know, obviously I think a lot of people were there just because Cyborg was fighting, but you definitely got the idea that people were there to genuinely watch some like badass.
They're finally getting it that women actually train and are doing things that like they're technical.
There was
fighters.
Plenty of blood drawn.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, yeah. There was. But I definitely think like it was considering that Invicta had so many setbacks this fight between people getting sick, injuries, weight cut issues.
Well, she got sick during the weight cut.
Right.
Yeah.
Like they pulled off it was sold out. It was crazy. Like I know that their events have been getting better like over the years, but it was just awesome to be there. And just the diversity. I mean, we comment on that the whole night that we were there, just like looking around, like legit, like not only faces of color, but truly multi-gender. I mean, it was easily half and half men and women.
It was just a really cool experience. I couldn't get over it. Obviously, the fights were amazing. It was really cool, but I could not get over the people that we were surrounded and just the respect and the attitude they had towards it. I kind of just kept like looking around at people. Yeah.
It was just an exciting place to be, just to literally be there, you know, besides actually getting to meet like Shannon and Julie from Invicta, but then also like seeing Cyborg fight. I've obviously never seen Cyborg fight. That was just a cool experience. I mean, she has a huge fan base. Although I do have to comment on something that was really funny. So Cyborg, if anybody has never been like amongst her camp or her people or at an event, she has a pretty like, I wouldn't say
she rolls deep.
Yeah, for a credit to her, for a female fighter, she's got a deep entourage, and you knew because they were wearing like their, you know,
they had these like matching
Brazilian flag, you know, Cyborg
with Jesus on the back.
Yeah, with Jesus. And the best part was like we get in.
Wow, Jesus has her back, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
Wow. So we're like, we get there. Event hasn't even started yet, and like the seats are like, you know, half empty because people are still trickling in, and like we see her crew like ordering beers and drinks all around.
Every time I looked at a bar,
there was like, there was Cyborg's team, and I was like,
I guess they're not worried.
You're not worried about it or something. But then I talked to somebody else. They're like, no, she rolls really deep.
None of those people are in her corner.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, exactly. They're not warming her up or like actually calling shots on the corner. But yeah, it was just funny because just they're just knocking them back. It was too funny.
I wanted that that tracksuit was like straight out of the 90s.
I know.
Glamour.
There was a merch table, and it was like, you know, they sold some Punishment Athletic stuff and whatever, and some of Cyborg stuff. But I was like, where's the jumpsuit? Like,
yeah, all I want is that. Man, I need that parachute material in my
like
life.
A Heartless Signature Series tracksuit.
And put Jesus on the back.
I miss the parachute pants in the 90s. I'm telling you guys. Yeah. Let's bring it back.
Yeah, bring it back.
That was awesome. Oh, we should. The walkout for Daria Ibragimova.
Oh my God.
So, okay.
I figured out what her background was, by the way. Apparently her background is in sumo. So the woman who fought Cyborg. So I did a little creeping. I'm going to put a disclaimer. I have not creeped on her enough to have as educated a decision. I'm going to act like I have. On Instagram, her Instagram didn't show up until like the day before she signed with Invicta, I think. Mm-hmm. But what I saw on her Instagram is that her background is in sumo and she's a 2015 sumo like world champion.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there were women.
Well,
sumos.
You know, mixed martial arts, right? Like it's like what you bring to the table, what you bring.
See, I thought her thing was sambo, and I'm not generalizing that just because she's Russian, but like I could have sworn. Are you sure you didn't mix
maybe
it up
she's
with sambo?
Both.
No, it definitely said sumo, 100%, because that's something you remember. Well, I mean, just because I was like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not like no judgment. I was like, oh, and maybe that explains why she tried to go for her one leg
catch. Yeah,
it was weird.
So we were like trying to figure out if she was trying to go for like a throw or something. Or a takedown, but she just kept holding on to Cyborg's leg. And Cyborg kind of had this like look of, what do I do with this?
She kind of kept looking at the ref like, can we... Like,
I think at one point, remember she literally motioned to Dario.
She like punched her a few times.
And she was like, ref, like, what do I do? She literally motioned to the ref, like, what do I do? Because she was just holding on to her leg.
That's a strategy.
Yeah. I said, well, I guess she wanted to make sure she lasted longer than a minute.
Yeah. Her walkout, though, was the most hysterical thing. And here's the thing. I'm one to talk, right? Like, I'm not walking to a cage sacrificing myself. But her walkout was...
What song did she come out to?
I Feel Good by James Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And she danced the entire way. Like, not just, like...
Not
she was,
dancing, like, not, like, grooving. We're talking, like, full-on dancing.
Yeah, like, James Brown slides and everything. And then when she actually got into the cage, she wasn't warming up. She was doing, like, a King Tut, like...
And
head move,
and they had
shimmy.
To stop her dancing so they could
kind of like Mayhem Miller's like old walkout. Have yeah, you ever watched him,
a little bit of that,
like, and that's background dancers.
And that's what I like, said to Lynn. I was like, maybe she's fought in Japan. I was like, I don't know. But like, they literally had to tell her to stop dancing so they could put like the Vaseline on her face. Like,
yeah,
she didn't.
The cut man was like, stop.
Like, he literally saw him put his hand up and be like. Stop. Wow. Everyone in the audience was like, gosh. You know when everyone's kind of got this like, oh, this is awkward kind of look?
I felt kind of bad because people in the audience started being like, I give it 45 seconds. I give it 30
you
seconds.
You were...
Yeah, I was kind of too. Well, I'm sorry. When you walk out like that, I can't take you seriously.
Well, it's not that. It's just like, I wonder how focused you are. It's one thing to have like a little, like... I'm the type of person, so like when I was rowing is obviously very different than getting punched in the face, but I was the type of person who I did like to talk to people. Like, if I had nervous energy, it helped me to talk to people and like to tell jokes. So I can appreciate a little bit of groove, and I can appreciate like, you know, bobbing the head.
No, but this was like a spectacle.
This was like full on. And she kept doing these like, you know, when like someone's got crazy eyes, like that.
Like, I'll tell you what, like, she was okay. So I think this is my day.
Do you have your
this
own crazy eyes story?
No, I don't. I can't do crazy eyes. Like, I am incapable of crazy eyes. I'm incapable of the. No, I mean, my boyfriend would probably argue with you. I have a pretty good glare, but I just can't do it. I can't call on it when I'm supposed to do these stupid face off. They're like, okay, look mean now. I'm like, this is my mean face.
I know.
But I'll tell you, like, the most nervous you're gonna get for a match is when you're on deck. It's like right before you walk out. Like, there's nothing worse when you're like the main event or the co-main event. You have to sit in the back, right? And you're just waiting. And you watch your friends that are fighting. Somebody loses, they come in all bloody. Somebody wins, everybody's cheering. And you're just sitting back there waiting. You're waiting for your time to warm up. You know, it's almost your turn. And there's something like about when you get on deck. And sometimes, depending on the promotion, sometimes you're standing there staring at your opponent and their crew, and sometimes you're not, right?
Yeah.
But you're standing there, and you're just about ready to walk out, and that's like, that's the point. If you're gonna get nervous, that's when it's gonna come.
Yeah,
is like right then, and you have to entertain the crowd. Like, part of people want to say you're fighters, but you're entertainers first. So part of it is, if you get that, and I've had it in different fights. Sometimes I don't get nervous at all, and sometimes I get like so nervous. But when you're ready to walk out, you better have your game face on, right? You better fake it to make it. And my perspective on that, if she was like really hamming it up, is that she was nervous as hell. And she is like faking it like the best that she could. Like, I ain't nervous. Look at me. I ain't nervous. I ain't nervous at all.
Like, well, that's my, so that's like, you know, Lynn's like, oh man, this is going to go quick. So my thought is either this is going to go real quick or this is going to be like, she's crazy and she's one of those people that has nothing to lose, which is probably the scariest person to be in her cage with. So that was my thought. Obviously, like, Cyborg, you kind of know she's gonna win, but like at the same time, you're like, okay, this is either gonna be pretty quick or this is gonna be interesting to watch.
Her eventual, it wasn't a true knockout, but her eventual TKO was
I think she did knock her out.
Was it a knockout?
Yeah.
Well, all I remember specifically was one play where Cyborg literally like pushed her against the cage, like pushed her like a rag doll, and just threw this big cross right into her face. And it was like, I was really frightened at that point, like, of Cyborg. I've always been scared of her, but just like seeing that play, I was like, shit. Yeah. I would never want to be there.
Yeah, right? But, what was your favorite fight?
Oh, that's You know, I think the Colleen Schneider and Raquel, I'm going to butcher her name.
Paolui. Yeah. Paolui. I don't know.
Dion, the resident.
Do you know how to say her
Dion,
last name?
The resident Samoan, okay, is go shaking ahead. Dion, his name.
Yeah, you do it.
Paolui.
That's what I said.
Paolui. There we go.
I'm sorry.
I felt so, it was a really good fight, but I felt so bad for the girls because what happened was, and be curious to hear if you've ever experienced some weird wonky setups like this, but I guess they had to take an ambulance. They had to take somebody to the hospital, and they have two ambulances on deck, one that's ready and one that's basically like a backup, and the backup one had to get set up and parked, and they couldn't start the fight until that was adequately set up.
But they let them walk out.
Yeah, they like walked out. They got the Vaseline. They're in the cage. The door is locked. And then John McCarthy, who was the ref for the fight, was like notified or whatever. And they had to ice them, basically. And the you know, Colleen's wearing these like
booty, like
Spanx underwear.
It kind of looked like what a cross country runner wears. Yeah. Like the short, the
I've seen pictures of that. Yeah. So.
And you know, Raquel's in her shorts and sports bra or whatever. So like these girls are freezing. And imagine like the adrenaline dump and just like it was, I mean, that was a really weird beginning to the fight. Yeah.
You know, that might have been a commission issue.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like they probably like walked them out, thought everything was good, and then the commission was probably like, okay, wait.
Yeah. You know? It just
oh sure. Yeah. Funny. I'm definitely not ragging on like the safety of the sport and stuff, but it's just like, could the girls put some clothes on so they're not like, you know,
because I was like, I'm kind
of
cold.
You know, I've heard stories of different things like that. Like I've heard of people being on deck for a long time. I've even heard of people like walking down, getting in the cage, and then one of the opponents at the last minute decided they didn't want to fight. Okay, never mind.
Crazy. So it's
like, I personally haven't had those experiences. I have had the experience two times now where the decision must have been so close. Like it took them so long to add the scores. For me, it's like, how hard is it to add tens and nines, right?
Right.
But where I was standing in the cage forever waiting for the decision. And so me and the opponent, we're just done fighting and we're like standing there like, okay.
So what are you doing this week?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, do you not have a calculator? Like, I don't understand what, like, why it takes so long. I mean, but that's happened to me twice, like two times where I'm just like standing there like, you know, and when you're like a main event or something like that, you're like the last fight. The crowd's filtering out. You don't get to say your like thank yous to everybody. You're just kind of standing there like, okay, bye everyone. This was fun.
That's,
you know, No,
there was also a local fighter that didn't get to fight. Amanda Bell. Her fight got pulled, which really sucked for
her. I love her. Like, she is so fun to watch. Mm, she's another one that's just got, like, that fighter instinct, you know? Uh-huh. Like, if you want to watch somebody that's just, like, can have that brutal, you know, she's got
hungry,
that for
sure. Yeah, I mean, she's a local fighter, so I was excited to see her. But, like, literally the day before, well, weigh-ins, basically, the day before we read that Edian Gomes had... was like throwing up that morning.
Yeah, I think she must have got like not food poisoning, but something happened in the weigh cut and she just couldn't. And they basically were saying
that commission said she can't.
She can't. Yeah. Like she's not going to be okay by tomorrow. Like she's.
That was a bummer.
Yeah.
Well, you were going to say something.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about weight cut. Like there's a lot of things that they're trying to do now to eliminate the unhealthy, you know, weight cuts and like some people, like I don't really cut that much weight. I do cut weight, but I don't cut as much as others.
Yeah.
But you know, like the UFC is now banning the use of IVs to rehydrate and things like that. But you hear of all sorts of things happening when people, not just when they cut the weight, but when they try to rehydrate afterwards, you know, where their kidneys fail and you know, there's been a couple.
And with some of those guys that are like cutting a lot of weight, what happens is you take the liquid that protects your brain and your skull and in your spinal cord and everything, you're dehydrating your nervous system. And that's when you get all these like brutal knockouts that have like lifelong issues. You know, obviously, thank God it doesn't happen a lot, but it has happened where people are dying in the ring because they probably had a really bad weight cut and
that's just, like the least favorite. That's my least favorite aspect of the sport. Like, I get that it's an equalizer, but I'm also like, and this is probably asking for too much given that there's all this drama about sponsorship pay, but it's like, couldn't they instate some sort of league-wide nutritionist that basically checks in and makes sure that you're actually doing what you're supposed to do.
There is a federation right now that's doing that. And so because of that, like a lot of their fighters are moving up a weight class, but they're doing checks throughout the fight camp, weight checks. And there are ways like wrestlers, like youth wrestlers, they do checks to make sure you're not dehydrated when you weigh in, because there's obviously ways to do that. I personally, like my thought on it, like, yeah, given the option, I wouldn't really want to cut weight. I fought up weight classes before, but to me, it's way more dangerous for me to fight somebody that outweighs me by 20 pounds,
right?
You know, 25 pounds than for me to cut, you know, and like I said, I don't do these massive weight cuts. I cut about, you know, 4 or 5 pounds, which is really nothing in the grand scheme of things.
But that's also par for your diet. Like, if you're always ready, quote unquote, right, then your cut theoretically shouldn't have to be that drastic.
Well, it depends because, okay, so figuring, like, there are fighters that walk around and you're figuring, like, percentage of their overall body weight, okay? So you've got fighters that walk around, like, 215 pounds or something, and they're cutting, trying to cut to 185. You know, when you're talking about fighters missing weight, you know, like, I was plagued with that almost all through the amateurs where my opponents were not making weight because there was no disciplinary action in the amateurs for not making weight.
Not you know, even when percentage of purse or anything?
There is no purse for amateurs. So it's like, it's just a matter of, are you still going to fight her or not? So like, I mean, I've had somebody miss weight by as much as 7 pounds. If you're going to miss weight by 7 pounds after you've cut, then what are you fighting? What is your fight weight when we step in there and actually compete?
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like, you know, we agree to fight. Right? And we agree to take the risks and we know everything that we're doing. Sure, I wish there were some things in place to kind of make it safer, but I think ultimately it should be kind of up to us. If we're going to like be that stupid that we're going to cut so much weight that we're going to make ourselves sick, then it's on you that you're not fighting up one more weight class. Like you obviously are cutting enough that you should be fighting another weight class.
So my question is that the athlete's decision or is that the coach's decision? Because I feel like sometimes when I was a rower, I had coaches try to push me to be a lightweight rower. I'm a chubby kid like that who, whatever the coaches that told me I should be a lightweight, dear God, I tried and my body shut down when I was trying to cut down to that weight. So, you know, is that the athlete saying, oh, I don't want to fight the people in my, or is that the coaches that are pushing them to say, oh, you should be down at 135?
Okay, it could be a coaching issue, but is it not your choice who your coach is?
Very true.
Mean? Like, if your coaches are pushing you to do something unhealthy, then maybe you should look at another, you know what I mean?
It's kind of like,
and I feel like ultimately all the decisions are up to the fighter. Like even with fights, you want to get your coach's approval before you take a fight.
Right.
You know, like, is this a good fight for me? Is this going to be, you know, because it's all a calculated risk.
Right.
Okay. But ultimately, you're the one that's signing the contract. You're the one getting in the cage. I mean, with somebody that's trying to cause you physical harm.
Right.
You need to take it all into consideration. And I feel like most good coaches are going to listen to you when you say, look, this is how my body works.
Right.
And this is what I know, you know, to be true. And maybe like you do a couple practice cuts if you're going to do weight cuts. Like, I'm not going to stand behind that every single person should cut weight. I know people who are very successful that don't cut weight.
Right.
That, you know, fight at their walk weight, you know, cause it does give you, there is advantages to that.
Right.
So, you know, like, I don't know. That's just kind of my take on it as a fighter.
But that's you being an intelligent fighter too, though. I mean, and that's like when I talk about coaches tried to make me go lightweight, I was young and whatever my coach said, I did. And that's very much, I think there are a lot of young athletes that, and I think we talked about this in the last one. If my coach told me I could do something, I could do it, you know? And I think,
and you don't want to let them down.
It was this almost like I gave my coaches my brain and I just trusted them wholeheartedly to get me to my goals. And I can imagine that probably happens a lot. It's just too bad.
I've seen it.
Yeah. As a rower, you're not getting into a cage. Like that's okay. Like the worst thing that happens is you lose a race. Whereas in MMA, boxing, combat sports, taking these risks without knowing the risks because you trust your coach. I've heard some really crazy cutting stories. Of like coaches giving insane supplements to their athletes. And it's just like, I can't believe it. So, but I, when I think of that, like had that happen when I was younger athlete and not proactive about my own training, I probably would have taken those supplements and been like, my coach says I need to do this. Right. You know, I'm going to get into the sauna for 6 hours tonight.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't. Yeah. I haven't seen that. Like it there takes are getting certain burned teams by a that couple. Get a reputation for showing up and never making weight because their coach has unrealistic ideas of what their fighters should be fighting at. Mm. You know, like they think like if you really think that cutting that much weight gives you that much of an advantage, then you don't have faith in your coaching ability. Like you should have enough faith in your ability to coach these athletes to be able to fight at a competitive weight. Like they shouldn't have to outweigh everybody they get in the cage with, right? Like it's
right.
I'm curious, have you thought about like being a coach yourself? Like
oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You practically are sort of informally by way of like, I know like you're really tight with Haley. So like you've sort of shown coaching capabilities on your own, but like, have you thought about doing more wholeheartedly? Cause I feel like you'd be really good. Every time your color commentaries are so indeed very colorful. And I'm like, I just can totally see you being one.
I do coach people. I do. I you know, on and off, I coach. It's hard. I had a really great boss mentor that told me one time, you cannot worship two masters. And what she meant by that is you cannot give your all to two different things. Like you have to decide. And for the recent history, I've been very focused on competing. Mm-hmm. And for me to be, you know, you have to be a little bit on the selfish side if you're going to compete. Yeah. You know, so I would coach on my off season and then I would get into my fight camps and be like focused on myself. I do think that in the long run, I will be coaching full time and that's going to be kind of, you know, it's what I'm good at. And so I'm always looking to continue my education for that purpose. Like I want to know, you know, I want to know more about cutting weight. I want to know more about, you know, wrapping hands and treating people, you know, in between rounds and what I feel like each fighter has a different style that they understand. Like one of the benefits for being a huge part of the FCFF is that I get to sit real close to the cage and I get to watch all these different coaches and their different styles of cornering people and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just interesting to me to be able to do that. So when
you are a little chess player, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
One time I went to an FCFF fight with her. I sat there and she's like tweeting all of her like commentary and everything. And she'll lean over to me. Now you see how he's like putting his arm in like, you know, she like gets real into it, but not in like a, I don't know. It's Glenna is definitely, I totally see coach all over her face.
You're a tinkerer.
She is.
A tinkerer.
But I just think, like, I think that's really rare. I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of coaches who speak to, like, generalities. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like generalities. But I feel like you were saying, she is a chess player. You're very calculated. Even with, like, your own fights, right? I think the way you prepare for your fights is, like, so impressive just because you're never jaded by... I mean, you're always entering enemy territory, first of all. That seems to be her jam, by the way. That's, like, Glenna's MO is, you want me to come to you? Okay. Like, I ain't scared of shit. I love it. Yeah. But she just... She always has such a level head about her. And I think it's... I don't know. I always get such inspiration from her.
I feel like you kind of have to. If you're going to do this sport, I'll tell you what. If you're the type of person to get angry and lose your shit... You will lose. Like, you will forget everything that you've ever learned, and you will forget that you know how to fight. You will just be, you know, you'll leave yourself open to all sorts of, and that's kind of like you see fighters that try to get that, like you, like the Diaz brothers, like they're always trying to get that anger out of their opponent, and that's because they're wanting them to get mad and screw up.
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
Conor McGregor. Yes. For all intents and purposes.
Yes. Gotta love emotions.
Yes. Yes. And fighters, like, we're emotional people. Like, we're emotional creatures. We try to pretend we're, you know, these, like, hard
I think people. All athletes are.
Oh, yeah.
I remember many times, like, I'd have one bad practice and I'd be like in the corner crying and I'd be like, my world is coming to an end. I'm never going to achieve my goals. And because you have to be, you have to have this attitude of like, this is my goal. I believe in myself. And like, if you have one sign of it's not going to happen, like this is your world. Like my alarm clock was set for 4:30 a.m. and I had to have my coffee in this. Like every decision throughout a day is made for this one goal. So if you see one crack in that, you're like, oh my God,
yes.
This is the worst.
Yes.
So
it's funny how superstitious athletes get over that kind of stuff. Like I always walk out to this song. It has to be this song.
What do you
like,
mean the CD scratch?
Wait. But see, that's where I feel like the coaching comes in, because exactly. You have to know when you hit that. You have to, like, I laugh because I say you have to have a mom and a dad when you're fighting, like when you're picking your corners, you got to have a mom and a dad.
Yeah.
You got to have you got to have somebody come in there and be like, listen, I don't care how you do it. You need to take this person down. Like
and then
whatever.
You have the other one who comes up and it's like, and I know you're going to do it.
Right. You got to have that person that comes up. That's like, look, your left hook is amazing.
Yeah.
Like you have been throwing that left hook and you've been landing it every single time. Good and your cop, hair looks cop. Fantastic. but seriously, like I feel like, especially like you're sitting in the back and you're waiting to fight, you got to have somebody that's like distracting you, mm-hmm. talking to you about everything other than fighting.
Right.
Like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, how's that, you know, rock star addiction or I don't know. It's like, whatever. You got to talk about whatever. And then, you know, and then when it's time to focus, you get that, that, you know, hardcore person that comes in and is like, you know, seriously, you're going to lose this fight if you don't turn it up.
Yeah,
you
get
know,
your shit you together.
Yeah. What the hell is wrong with you? Like, yeah, no. But I feel like that's when you're going to get the best results. You need to be able to see your athletes. You got to be able to see when they're breaking. When to build them up, when to build their confidence, you know, and when to show them that they don't know everything.
Yeah, well, and especially, I can't imagine, obviously, when you're in the cage, and we sort of talked about this, I think, the Emily podcast, but like when you're in the cage and you get rocked, you rock the other person, like you kind of have no clue what is happening. Like you're not seeing the full picture. Mm-hmm. So you need those dynamics too to actually.
Oh, yeah, they're your eyes and ears.
Paint it out for you.
Exactly. No, and I felt like, I think that was really cool to see too, like, because we were sitting pretty close at Invicta, and you could almost hear and see the corners telling what the women to do. And that was really cool to see, not that corners don't do their jobs, but for women's fight, I think being able to see how well they picked up on what their coaches were saying.
Well, and it was very interesting to see the different styles of cornering too. Mm-hmm. Like there were some who were like, I think it was Raquel's corner. You could they were on the other side and you could still hear them, but it was very like calm and like, you know,
yes.
A couple of words, like very concise, which is very similar. Like you would hear that in rowing too. Like you just hear a couple words screamed across the water from your coach, but it was, you know, concise. But then you had some coaches that you could hear like yelling at their, not in a bad, but
just,
you know,
calling. Get passionately into
like,
it.
Just so into it. And, you know, it was very interesting to see the different styles of cornering. Yeah.
You know
so.
What is like, I'll tell you guys look this up because, it's like one of the best jobs cornering I've ever seen. Look up, for one, it's a phenomenal fight. Julie Kedzie versus Misha Tate.
Okay. Mm.
The fight itself is amazing. Mm-hmm. And both women are just warriors.
Yep.
But Greg Jackson cornering Julie Kedzie, it was so quiet because he was just like, that's it, Julie. It's your night. Like you're like, it
the
was
mom.
Like,
is yeah, the mom it or was, the dad?
Yeah, it was amazing. Like to see how he just like, had like, and she, it was almost like she was in a trance listening to him. Like, I was like, wow, I want to be able to do that. But I also want to be able, I want to be both. Like, I don't want to be limited to be just the mom. I want to be the dad too. Like, I want to be like, get your shit together. What are you thinking?
So you like also, break them down to build them back up in 1 minute.
You're also,
sounds like a recipe. It sounds like a recipe for an abusive relationship. That's great, guys. That's great. I'll definitely look that up.
Yeah,
but definitely, you know, and listeners, look it up. It's a good fight. I think it's a great, it was like one of the best examples of women fighting. Like it was just like these, they went at it and it was just, I don't know. I was beside myself watching it. I was inspired.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. We are at an hour or a little over an hour. This is impressive.
Time for having fun.
Well done, ladies.
Yeah. We usually have our podcast wrap up in about an hour, but...
Glenn, is there anything you want to plug for yourself?
Yes, like, please.
You know, are there any, like, where should people be following you if they want to get inspired like they are now? And
You can find me on Twitter, MMA Heartless, Heartless MMA on Instagram. Just Google Glenna if you want information on the movie.
Yeah, just IMDb.
G-L-E-N-A. Super simple. yeah, just reach out to me. Also give a big shout out to Lana's Egg Whites, Pineapple Smash, like two of my favorite things.
I'm so going to try that now that you convinced me. Yeah.
Max Muscle, Jansen Beach. Big shout out to all my followers.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lana, for coming in. This was, I'm like beaming because I love Glenna.
This has just basically been 3 days of girl power.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Well, thanks again, guys. And join us next time.
Bye. Hooray.